fantastic email. You guys are real nerds. By the way, here is the whole Harry Potter family tree. Thank you. All right. Thank you. 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. All right, we have a clarification now on Harry Potter book 7. The Harry Potter 7th book release date is rumored to be... shades of Orange Across the Hawthorne. Book 7 coming out on 7-7-0-7. Says Todd the Corpse. All right, it's 503-733-2970. It's the... Rick Emerson radio program. We'll do Rockstar recap here in just a few. We'll talk about last night, which is not terribly interesting because it's really not going to get interesting slash stressful until Storm could conceivably start ending up in the bottom three, which is going to be a few weeks from now. But we will talk about last night and another shameless escape by Zaira from the Hatchet Man. As they get rid of, I'll just say right now, they got rid of Dana, which is ridiculous on a whole bunch of levels. And yes, I realize that I'm now beginning all amped up about it.
No, I'm going to stop
goddamn
voting.
Damn reality program.
You know that she wasn't in there. They didn't want to put Zaira or whatever her name is in there again. Means our votes don't count, which means I don't want to vote anymore.
It means that on reality programs, just like in the real world, your vote means nothing. And it's probably not even being counted. Carl Rove was probably behind all of this. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program from the Hill, Bob Gustentini, man about town. Hello, sir. How are you today?
I am doing fine. How is everyone there?
Bob.
Wonderful.
Bob Gustentini, we're rolling along. How's how's life in D.C.?
It's been very hot again today. I don't know if we've topped 100 officially, but the past couple of days have been very brutal. Unlike I imagine how it is there in cooler cooler part of the world, the Northwest.
Well, all right then. So let me ask you this. We were talking about this earlier because about 98% of my knowledge of the American political process comes from Aaron Sorkin programs, and that includes the layout of the White House press briefing room. And now haven't you guys been moved a couple different times by the Bush administration already? I mean, aren't they basically one step away from just having all this take place in a tool shed somewhere?
No, that's not quite true. The briefing room has been renovated a few times ever since it was dedicated to James Brady, the Reagan press secretary, who was hurt severely in the assassination.
The Hinckley thing, yeah.
It's been renovated a few times, but lately, the times that I've been in there, you go to sit down and it's theater-style seating, and the bottom part of the seat might just come off and fall and leave you halfway to the floor, one side of it or whatever. It snags your clothes. It's messy. And underneath is the old FDR pool, installed by FDR, but it was turned into the briefing room way back in the Nixon.
That was the Nixon era, right?
Yeah. But underneath it is the pool, and there's the wooden floor is starting to sag, and there are cables inside the pool there, in the pool, underneath, and
So really, the White House press briefing room really is symbolic and emblematic of our entire political process in this fading republic, is it not? It really is.
Look at it that way.
It really just does represent everything that is sort of going on right now. I had heard, now I don't know if you know this to be true, maybe this is just ill-founded gossip and pointless speculation, which we love, but yeah. I had heard that Nixon had the pool, gotten rid of or paved over or something because, how do I put this? I heard that Nixon got rid of the pool because Nixon, in turn, had heard that Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe used to have dalliances down there, and he, of course, Nixon being a staunch and moral person, he was offended by that, and that's why he got rid of the swimming pool.
I can neither confirm or deny that story.
Let's just pretend that it's true then from here on out.
Way above there, yeah. Yes.
And I know Nixon was all excited to put in a bowling alley. That was his big, was Nixon's contribution to the White House.
I remember that. The interesting thing about the briefing room was if you bring an outsider into it, the first thing they will just say is, oh my God, it looks so much bigger on TV. It is very cramped in the room itself. And the press quarters that exist there are also quite cramped. There's nothing glamorous about covering the White House. I've been on and off there for 16-17 years now. I've covered I've been in that briefing room, and there's not even a commiss area, so to speak. There's a tiny little area with some vending machines and a table that would seat maybe about 10 people at the very max.
Are you sure you don't actually work at CBS Radio? Because this is all sounding very familiar.
Oh, it is? Oh, yes. I didn't know that.
No, I think your job and our jobs are similar in that the exciting part is telling people what you do and where you work, and then the goal then is to keep them from ever actually seeing it or coming there, you know, like coming there and seeing physically where you do the job, because at that point all the luster and glamour just falls away like so many scales.
That's for sure. It is like a painted lady, except boy, once you remove the glamour to it all, it is nothing. It is nothing terribly glamorous about it, I can tell you.
All right, my friend. Thank you so much, Bob Costantini, covering that on the Hill. All right, there you go, Bob Costantini from CNN Radio. All right, there you go. Thank you.
That was very informative. It was like an after-school special.
You come away from this program really is a throwback to the full-service stations of old, Tim. Because you listen to this program, you hear about the White House press briefing room, you hear about Nixon, you hear about bowling alleys, Harry Potter, clowns, penises, and so forth. It really is. You know what it is? This program is sort of a radio version of VSO. It is all you need for one day. Really, everything you could conceivably need in your life to be entertained and informed. You get in one three-hour package tied up with a little red bow here every day.
We should all be sponsored for VSO, not just you. We're all equal whores for it.
And we're all equally caffeinated and cranked up today. I really, there's something.
Except for me, mine is sugar-free. I'm just feeling healthy.
No, but yours is not
more of everything good.
Yours is not caffeine free though, is it? Wait, what is
it?
It is. What you just drank?
That's my favorite flavor.
Mm-hmm. You were having the caffeine free kind. You were having the piña flavor.
Pina.
Oh yeah, helps your body get the nutrients it needs to keep you going without caffeine. All right. What are we doing here? Is it like 10 after? All right.
Yeah, it is.
Well, we should talk about.
Oh, go ahead.
Yes.
What? Who?
Start.
Okay, we should talk about. Do you want to talk about Rockstar Supernova?
That's exactly what I was going to do.
And then you can go into the break with maybe the worst song ever. We can get that done?
Yes, we should do that. All right, well, let me read a couple of emails about last night's Rockstar Supernova. We'll recap briefly a couple of the performances, then we'll play It's the Worst Song Ever, then we'll break. Let me see here. Got a couple of these. Let's see, how about this? Rick, did you know, this is from our good friend Siegfried. Rick, did you notice when Dana got canned last night that she had she mentioned having, quote, a lot of firsts, and then looked back longingly at Storm? Just wondering if you noticed that from Siegfried. Boy, and Davey and I both, we were hanging out with Davey last night, who's, you know, Storm's significant other and musical director for Storm and the Balls. And we were hanging out with him last night, and we didn't even realize till like 8:50 that the show was on.
And we're sitting right under a television.
Just underneath a TV, and suddenly we're like, and not that we knew Storm wasn't going to be there. You want to see who gets voted off. And because even I now, and I know better, I'm hoping it's going to be Zaira. I mean, you talk about someone who is universally despised, hunted, despised, like an animal. Somebody who everybody knows is terrible, and you do wonder if she is aware that she's terrible. Because, you know, there's that thing where ugly chicks always think they're hot. And you know that this is true. That hot chicks are always, and Thomas talked about this, but everybody knows it is true, that hot chicks are always really insecure about their looks. But you get some woman who weighs 900 pounds and has a third eye, and they all think that they're beautiful. They're always like, I'm damn sexy. And they're like, okay, you know, whatever. I'm big and beautiful. They have more of me to love. And it's just like, okay, sorry. And you wonder if there's some musical equivalent of that with Zaira. You wonder if she's aware. Like, is she just in some little, some little sassy Zaira bubble where she does not know how bad she sucks? I don't even really know if you were aware of how terrible you were as her, if you could get up there behind a microphone and perform every week knowing that you were utterly awful. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
And knowing that people aren't voting for her and that the votes are, it really kind of frustrated me because.
So, Laura had the best theory about this though, because. Since you missed a moment just now where Sarah became so angry she couldn't even speak. Your just face sort of squinched up like a grapefruit. You just had nothing you could even say.
Well, poor Dana. She really gave it her all yesterday.
That's what I'm saying. So this is, let me get to this in the order of, escalating outrages. Boy, that VSO's like crack. There's something wrong with
it. I know.
I'm pretty sure that should be illegal. But Lara had a really interesting thought on this last night, because I came home from hanging out with you guys, and Lara had already watched it, of course. And, of course, what happens? I walk in the door last night. You can hear how cranked up I'm already getting about this, because the whole thing is retarded. Mm-hmm. I walk in the door, freaking not, I love you, how was your day? Boy, am I glad we're together? How's the dog? Nothing like that. Walk in the front door, and I'm like, how about that crap with Zaira not getting... And Laura's... I'm just opening the door, and she is also halfway through some rant about how what BS it is that Dana gets kicked off last night. And I'm like way more invested in this than I even should be, but she had a great theory about this. And Laura's theory is, which I had never thought of.
Laura always has really good theories.
She's the thinking half of the couple. Her theory, which makes sense, but which had never occurred to me, cynical though I am, her thought is that Zaira is so loathed and hated and detested and despised that, how do I put this, that hatred for Zaira is actually resulting in more voting for other people. Therefore, more money for Verizon and presumably MSN, presumably Mark Burnett, presumably CBS, etc. So that's Lara's theory, is that every week Zaira continues to be there. More people are like, well, damn it, I'm voting for Storm 50 times to get rid of that Zaira girl. You know, I'm going to vote even more. Or if you see that it's Zaira and whatever, Jill and Josh in the bottom three, they're like, I'm going to vote for these other guys like 100 times tonight just to get rid of that Zaira girl. So it's just more money for everybody, you know, for everybody involved. That's her theory, is that Zaira is being kept there to spur more voting. My observation about last night, and we'll play a few of these performances, is I'm so unclear, and I realize I'm trying to impose like actual real logical rules on a reality show, but I am so unclear about whether... I mean, when this is over, and Scotty, please to be noting this, when this is over, I really want to interview for 5 minutes one of the guys from Supernova, because I understand that a lot of it's not rigged, but, you know, they do it for television. Again, they keep Zaira because they know that she gets the audience all riled up. I understand that. But when it comes to the voting off of somebody who clearly isn't going to win anyway, like you've got a Dana. Dana's a perfect example of this. Like, now, Dana's the little Southern girl, 22, chugged a beer, got a tattoo. When you got somebody like her, she's not terrible, but at the same time, she's clearly not going to win. You've got two or three people at the top. I say probably Storm, Lucas, Delana, who are going to make the top three.
And Toby. A lot of people are saying Toby.
Maybe Toby. And then you've got, like, the other six who, you know, you just know they're not going to make it. Like, you know Patrice is just not going to make it to the day. Everybody knows that. And so when it comes to voting off the losers, when it comes to voting off the chaff, are they voting off people based on them sucking? You know, in other words... Or is it based on how good they would be for Supernova? All things being equal, what's more important when it comes to voting somebody off, getting rid of somebody? Is it that you're bad, or is it that you're wrong for the group? In other words, if somebody gave a really, really great performance that was completely wrong for Supernova, is that really what counts?
Because, well, it's like that Josh guy. I mean, he's absolutely not what they're looking for. He's like little Mr., you know, white boy soul man. We were talking about that. But he totally killed it on Sublime Santeria. He did a really good job.
So by that rationale, it just makes me even angrier that Dana got kicked off. A, because she has massive bosoms that I enjoyed staring at every week in a longing and lecherous fashion. Davey did as well, by the way. I can say that because Storm is not in town. Also... But she got better every single week, mm-hmm. And last night she did a really great job. Meanwhile, Patrice just continues to both suck and blow. And then whoever else, was it Jill? Jill, who, as Davey said it, you know, get back to the pole, sister, because there's no singing in your future. So by everybody's acknowledgement, Dana continues to get better every week. She's the only one taking their advice and really learning. She's actually become a much better singer. She's got the most room to improve because she's only 22. And yet then they get rid of her last night. And the whole thing just makes me angry beyond words, which is retarded. This anger brought to you by Viso. More caring about things that don't really matter. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Is this Kristen? All right, let's welcome the lovely Kristen from accounting who joins us now. Hello, sir.
Oh, my God.
Sir, ma'am, miss.
I'm
hello.
I'm listening to you, and I'm just, like, getting riled up myself. But I think you're missing one
God
of...
God almighty.
I think you're missing one of the key things. One of my theories is they're not doing it by talent in these bottom, you know, in the first few weeks. I think they know who they want to be in the top four, as you just discussed.
Right.
They know that those are the folks that it's going to come down to. So leading up to that, it has nothing to do. I thought Dana did fantastic. I thought Patrice sucked.
Of course.
Jill is just miserable. But when you look at it from a dramatic point of view, look at the reality episodes. Jill is high maintenance. Like, girlfriend gone crazy, like, talking too much and all like, you know, out of her mind. So that is more of an incentive for people to watch the reality because they like to watch the train wrecks.
Maybe.
So I think they're looking at it from the reality standpoint where who is going to get the most viewers online for the reality portions. And that is, I think in this case, Jill rather than Dana.
Well, I'm not going to play them all, but I got some of the performances from last night. So this is Dana singing, let's see, where are we? This is Dana singing House of the Rising Sun. All right, hold on. Here we go. This is which is a song that I love, by the way, and I've it's a classic classic rock song. So here we go. This. Man, she's working the camera too. I know you can't see this at all, but she's totally doing the sultry eye contact.
Oh, I'm a poor boy.
That's a bad hairstyle for her, though. You can really, her chunkiness really stands out there with her hair pulled back. Whoever thought that I would be speaking this way on the, she really should do something different with her hair.
Yeah, it doesn't even look like she did anything with it.
This is a great performance. I don't care who you are. This is, especially if you, I would encourage you to go on YouTube and watch this on YouTube where you can see her. Oh, come on, look at that.
I thought perhaps
that's just hot.
Didn't she work the camera a little too much and not enough of the audience?
Maybe, I don't know. So there you go. That's Dana last night. I mean, she really does seem like she's come a long, long way. And so it just sort of angers me that she got kicked off. So somebody is noting now that she's a loser, Scotty J can probably get her on the show. All right, there you go. You do that, I'll buy you lunch, Scotty. All right. Let's see, what else do we have? Oh, this is Patrice. I'm not a Jeff Buckley fan. I know there's some rule that all chicks have to like Jeff Buckley because he was cute and died. But so this is her singing some Jeff Buckley song. Let's sing.
Girl.
She needs to bathe, too.
What's with the buns in her hair?
The buns. She's sort of got like these Princess Leia things, but they unspooled about halfway.
She looks like Farina on The Little Rascals.
The best thing about that is that her hairstylist obviously hates her. With that faux hawk night before and then the buns.
Does this look okay? Yeah, it's fine. Get out there.
Although, do you think she's trying to cover up for the lack of talent by doing different weird things with her hair?
Distracting from it?
Maybe if I style my hair, they'll notice that I can't sing.
Distraction.
Yeah. And as your fantasy, I'm Alicia Effridge. I can't listen to any more of them.
Yeah, just terrible.
And I don't even remember. Oh, Jill mangled a Heart song.
Ugh.
She mangled a song I love, a later song for in Heart. This came out of like 88, 89. This is Alone, which was, let's see. Where this is off the Bad Animals album. You know, it is astonishing how much pointless and stupid musical knowledge we all have on this program.
So this is her once again trying to be Storm.
Totally. Exactly. How many times, let me ask you this, how many times have we all watched Rockstar Supernova and as somebody else is performing said, oh, I would love to hear Storm sing this? That was me with Bob O'Reilly.
That goes by so very slow. Oh, I hope that it won't end though. Alone. Till now, I always got that on my own. I never.
Okay. It's just, it's all of the, I know that's been said a jillion times, but it's all that over-singing. And the thing about Storm is, it's Storm, and there's some other people too, Delana probably, who just, they know when not to do it, you know? You gotta know when, it's not always what you put in, it's what you leave out sometimes.
And that's what a lot of singers don't get these days, and I blame it all on Mariah Carey.
I blame it all on the kids and the fact that they won't stay off my lawn.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, this is, I'm reading this now. Todd, let's see, where do I have a sounder for this? This is from Todd the Corpse.
Come on!
Rick, we were watching the performance again yesterday, presumably him and Mrs. Corpse, and I swear that, okay, this is Todd saying this now, I am not asserting this. He says, I swear, Rick, that Josh shouts, quote, come on and sing all you black people, end quote, in the middle of his song. I'm not saying that that's the case, but, you know, he is a soul man.
Oh.
So perhaps many of his best friends are black.
His peeps.
Yes. Also, I was reading that Jill is the lead singer of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Is that true? That's insane.
That would be totally fitting. I could totally believe that.
I could totally believe it, too, because those guys were all about overplaying and oversinging, and too much is never enough, and they're melodramatic. I'm saying that sort of... That almost seems like cheating, though, if she already has a career with a platinum-selling musical act. Well, whatever. Anyway, so there you go. Blah-da-da-blah-da-da-blah. And blah-blah-blah. So is there anything? That's pretty much it. I mean, there's really nothing else to recap, is there? All right.
It was pretty,
All right.
Anticlimactic.
There you go. There's Kristen. Thank you, Kristen.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That's Kristen from accounting. All right, we don't have time for the... worst song ever right now, because we got Peter Carlin coming at the bottom of the hour, right?
All right. Break.
So with break here, we've got Peter Carlin coming up at the bottom of the hour. He is going to talk to us about his new book, Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. I think he actually is just coming on to talk for like 10 seconds, and then he's going to plug a reading he's doing tonight. I don't think he's actually going to bring any content. There will be no substance to his appearance. It will be pure shilling. Let's see. Later on, we have Matt Lindland who's going to talk about Sport Fight 17. We've got the top 10 songs Scotty hates playing at weddings. You stay there. Back after this. It's the Rick Emerson Show. I can't tell.
That's gibberish. What is he saying?
That's a whole lot of nothing he's saying there. Wait, let me back it up here. As the kids say, let me back it up. Wait, here we go. Josh Logan.
That's right.
I can't tell what the hell he's saying.
I think he ends up, let's do this now.
All right, this is Josh Logan singing Centuria. This is a Sublime song, right?
Yes.
On Rockstar Supernova on Tuesday. Now, our good friend Todd the Corpse, and again, this is his assertion, this is not something I am saying. Our good friend Todd the Corpse and Mrs. Corpse were watching this, and Todd, who is not a man given to making things up, claims that Josh is saying here something to the effect of,
That's right,
black people.
So right after the audience says 45.
It's in 4 seconds.
Daddy's got a new... Yeah, that's right, black people. Let's do the same.
I honestly can't tell what
Maybe
the hell he's saying.
Talking to one of the house band members.
Are there black people in the house band? We should
the drummer,
have this.
The drummer was.
Well, that's black person. That's right.
No, I'm saying maybe it's someone's
person.
Name. Maybe it's the name.
I don't know the answer to that.
Like Brian.
To continue this awkward white conversation, let's welcome Peter Carlin, TV critic from the Oregonian and author of Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of Brian Wilson. Hello, Peter Carlin. How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm okay.
Pizza.
Very mystified by Josh Logan on that. Are you watching?
What the heck is, who's Josh Logan?
We're watching Rockstar Supernova.
Oh, he's on that show.
He is on that program. And so this is...
He's the white guy with soul.
Yes, you can tell he's got soul because he's got a little soul patch and his hat is turned backward.
No, but kind of
really?
Off filter a little
bit. Yeah, no, it's like at a rakish angle. It's like at a 45-degree angle, sort of.
Well, I didn't know about the hat.
That is how you can tell that he is deep inside. He has a soft chocolate center.
What's he saying about black people in
this? This is... He is performing this song, this sort of this song by a band called Sublime. It's sort of a reggae light song called Santeria. And he performed on Tuesday, and he's just sort of neither here nor there. He's not great. He's not terrible. And so we didn't think anything else about it.
Right.
I got this email today from a listener of mine who is very trustworthy, who says that he and his wife were watching this, and that they swear that at the 111 mark, while singing this reggae song, that he says something very similar to, he says something to the effect of, "That's right, black people," which, as we've been playing it like 100 times in a row, trying to figure out what, I'll play it once more here. It's four, right here.
Yeah, that's right, black people. Let's do this.
But it just sounds like a bunch of gibberish. I can't tell what the hell he's saying. It sounds like a bunch of hillbilly nonsense.
Is he from Jamaica?
No, he's from
Connecticut.
He's from like Ohio, yeah.
But he's been to Jamaica.
No, he saw it. No, I believe that he wandered by a store one time that was playing some Peter Tosh. I believe that is that's the extent of it.
Yeah.
So, anyway, how's life with you, Peter Carlin?
Oh, hectic.
You did what?
I said hectic. With a French accent.
I'm sorry.
That's how crazy I am.
You did 19 phone interviews yesterday.
I know.
Up at 3:30 a.m.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, are these all with kooky, like, FM DJs, or who are these interviews with?
Well, it was a whole variety of different people. There were NPR people, and there were, like, Z Morning Zoo type people.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The first guy, this is at 4:08 in the morning, our time, says he's this dude in Philadelphia, this crusty AM talk radio guy. And his first thing, and this is the very, very first question of what's going to be a very long morning that's beginning for me in the middle of the night, and he says, "Well, I met the Beach Boys 35 years ago, and Brian and Dennis in particular were crazy then. Are they crazy now?"
Well, Brian's is. I can't really speak for Dennis's craziness.
Yeah.
God?
It's a poetry. Yeah, yeah. Serious. Well, you know, it was kind of...
He's crazy dead.
But it was like, you know, well, thanks.
Well, you know, the problem is you get those idiot DJs,
yeah,
and they ask these non sequitur questions.
Mm-hmm.
They're just questions that go nowhere. Questions you can't respond to. Like, here's, radio station people are the very worst, because especially people who are music DJs, and I like to think that I got out of there early enough that it didn't affect me that much, but it's because they've spent their whole careers trying to say these cool-sounding, glib, crap phrases that mean nothing.
Mm.
And so, like, I won't name names, but there's a guy I work with here, and I will pass him in the hallway sometimes, and he's an FM radio type, and I will pass him in the hallways, and he's actually not the first guy I know who does this, but he will pass me in the hallway, and I'll sort of smile at him Dilbert style and be like, hey, how's it going, man? And he will look at me, and sometimes he'll like kind of point at me, like not cocking the fingers,
right,
but pointing, and he'll go, "Hey, man, you kicking ass?" And it's like, what, how, yes. You know, moderately. What? How am I supposed to respond to that? There's
with
no
weather
way.
In traffic.
Yes. Exactly. Are you kicking ass 5 times an hour on the fives? Just a bunch of garbage. So anyway, but you're doing a reading tonight. We'll do the pimping right now. You're doing the reading at,
yeah,
where is it at?
It's at Annie Bloom's bookstore in Multnomah. 7:30 p.m.
Oh, like Multnomah Village, kind of like by the Fat City Smokehouse and all that stuff.
Yeah, the Fat City's not a smokehouse. It's an oldie world cafe.
Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, all I know is they have huge biscuits. They've got a buttermilk biscuit there the size of a tire.
Yeah. I used to be mad. I used to be crazy wild for their hash browns.
You and Dennis Wilson.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, we did not get you on Monday because we were running behind, and I didn't want you to come in and then be under the gun, and then you were busy yesterday with this. So you are going to be, are you coming in on Monday?
Yeah.
All right, you're coming on Monday, and we'll talk about your book. But I do have this one question, actually, that a listener emailed to me, and it's probably fair enough to answer now since you're here talking about the book a little bit. Let's see, it says, let's see, where the hell? What in the hell? It is a question, let's see, Peter Carlin. He says, this question is, I have a question. When I walk through the biography section, I see a lot of books about people like Elvis, Marilyn, the Beatles, Brian Wilson, etc.
Yes.
What is his impetus to write the book? Aren't there dozens of Beach Boys books already published? Just wondering. Which I guess is a fair point, because the Beach Boys are one of those bands that's been dissected a lot. But you, the New York Times Review of Books, actually, they didn't use this phrase, but they more or less said that yours is kind of the definitive book. So what is different about yours? What is sort of the... What was the impetus to write this?
Well, I should have a snappy question. I should have a snappy.
You did 19 work. Interviews yesterday.
I know,
you don't,
on, Peter.
I know that part of my brain is sore. Raw.
The glibness.
I was trying
didn't
to come
off.
Up with something. Let's see. Well, you know, I mean, the thing is that you end up, you know, as a student or as a person who's read like the vast majority of all those books that guy's seen on this particular topic.
Right.
I always went away wondering how come they were never answering the questions that I wanted answered.
That you wanted to know.
Saying things, you know, or just. the amazing thing about a lot of those books is that they didn't really talk about the true subject at hand, which is the music.
Right.
And to me, you know, the significance of the music or the place of the music within this larger sort of American cultural scene. You know, like the question is, 45 years on, how come people in Nebraska are still listening to Surfin' USA?
I got to tell you, man, and Will, I got to try very hard not to exhaust all my questions here, because we're going to have you on Monday to talk about your book and to whore it relentlessly. And also for you to give me a copy of that Aaron Sorkin advanced
DVD. Oh, yeah, full on. I got it right here.
Excellent. But, you know, I heard...
looking over my shoulder and realizing it's not here anymore. Where did it go? Anyway, go ahead. Speak.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, yeah, moving on. Quick. No, I heard there's actually a group that there's this sort of a punk pop group called the Travoltas that I discovered, I don't know, about 6 months or so ago, and they're from the Netherlands.
Really?
And yeah, they're from the Netherlands. To my knowledge, I don't think they've ever been to the United States. I think they've kind of sort of run Europe, but they're sort of big over there. But they have never been to America. But this guy who leads, and his English is not their primary language, it's a second language. So you listen to them, and you can kind of hear a little bit of the stilted phrasing that comes with singing in a language that is not your own. But they have this album called, well, I will just tell you that it's this, they have this whole Beach Boys fetish, and the guy tells a great story about he grew up listening to a lot of punk, and then somebody gave him a Beach Boys record when he was like 16. And so you listen, I'll play the song when you come in on Monday, just as sort of a case study. You listen to this guy who grew up in the Netherlands, has never been to America, let alone been to Brian Wilson's California, and you listen to these songs, and there are these, you know, it's an album called, of all things, Endless Summer.
Uh-huh.
They have these endless songs about the beach and the car and the girl and the high school and the big game on Friday, with these like amazing 3- and 4-part harmonies.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, they're basically Beach Boy songs from a guy that has never been to this country. And Brian Wilson created for an entire world, he created a vision of California that everybody could describe never having been there.
Yeah, which is the interesting thing, but I think it also, you know, served as a kind of a, you know, as a metaphor for much larger feelings and ideas, you know, just this whole idea of the West as this, you know, open and, you know, this kind of fresh horizon where you can reinvent yourself however you wanted to. And what makes their music, you know, live decades on is the amount of darkness that's in it. You know, that's what makes that journey into the light, or that dreamed journey into the light, that much more vivid and meaningful, is the fact that everything is not okay. You know, everything is never okay in those songs. Their happy songs always have some little cloud of gloom.
Sure.
Not so far from the center of
things. A song like In My Room is a good example of that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a totally morose tune, but even a song like, Catch a Wave, for instance, or Fun, you know, which ends with the girl's car being yanked away by the old man
right,
who's looming over her, or I Get Around with the bad guys who know us and yet they leave us alone. Like, why even mention those guys?
Right.
They're out there.
Or
All Summer Long, which is a song about the joy of summer sung, like, essentially on the first day of autumn. You know,
there is like a weird sort of poignancy to a lot of the classic Beach Boys songs. And you know, it's not just the Beach Boys; the Beatles were that way too. I've always pointed, my favorite example with the Beatles, where there's sort of the sort of subtext to it is She Loves You,
mm-hmm.
where if you listen to She Loves You by the Beatles, which sounds like such on the surface such a joyful, exuberant song, you know, she loves you, yeah. Clearly, the whole song is like a veiled threat of, if you don't take care of your girlfriend, I'm going to steal her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's that, you know, clearly the subtext is, with a love like that, you know you should be glad. And it's, so he's talking about, I saw your girl yesterday and she wanted you to know, or whatever. I forget the exact phrase, but he's clearly saying, like, I talked to your girl yesterday and boy, she's great and you better take care of that or I'm going to move on in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
or another interpretation would be, you know, urging someone to not screw up this relationship,
right.
Actually. But then the intriguing thing is, what's this impulse to screw up the relationship?
Right.
Who is this clown you're talking to?
Brian Wilson actually allegedly, now there was a book called Wouldn't It Be Nice, which came out, when, in the early 90s? Which was a supposed autobiography. Now, is that which I read and at the time thought was, because it says, by Brian Wilson, you know, with Todd Gold, my autobiography. Is that just that book a big load?
Yes. The great thing about that book is that if you have read the rest of the books and articles, the significant ones about Brian, is the way that certain stories and anecdotes are that have been told about him by other writers and other observers were rehashed in that book with the pronouns changed.
Exactly. Well, which is why the book seemed so legitimate to me, because it echoed things I had read about Brian Wilson elsewhere.
I know, but sadly, it echoed them so closely.
Ah.
It became fairly clear that the co-author, who was a colleague of mine when I was at People, by the way, may have had a bigger hand in, or maybe even Brian just rattled them off in the way that, you know, I mean, you could see that happening too.
Sure.
Because he, you know, he does, often there are times when he's not into something, he'll say what he needs to say just to get out of the room.
Because it makes the question go away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. So Peter Carl, well, you're going to be here Monday to talk about your new book, Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson. Tell, where again is your reading tonight?
At Annie Bloom's in Multnomah Village.
At what time?
7:30 p.m.
See, you did 19 of these yesterday. I figured you'd have it down to a science by now. You'd just be spitting out that information, plugging like a pro.
Yeah, you'd think. Well, it was okay for a while, but I'm out of training and I'm rattled. At some point, we should need to talk about my ongoing multimedia throwdown with Bill O'Reilly.
Dude, that's that's why we're having you in on Monday, because we're going to spend, we're going to catch up on everything we've been meeting to catch up on.
Alrighty.
Because you had that 6-month hiatus, then you've got to busy with this, and so I got a long list of things we're going to talk about.
Okay.
All right, Peter Carlin, and go see that reading tonight, and then we will talk to you in studio on Monday, my friend.
Groovy.
There you go. Thank you, my friend. There's Peter Carlin, TV critic for The Oregonian, author of Catch a Wave, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson, which we will be relentlessly whoring from now till whenever. All right. Do we have to break? Or are we ahead of time? Here's the deal. Here's an email. Rick, you douche. Okay? Oh, this is from your ex. This is from Justin.
Oh.
Hey, douche. Oh, thanks. All right. I first want to make the... And it's all about Rockstar Supernova. Yeah. Okay. I thought it was about the... I thought it was about something else.
How's this?
Oh, wait, no, here's another one. Here's an earlier email from your ex-boyfriend. Rick, about renovations of houses. We were making the observation earlier. Nate's out of town. I could talk freely. We were making the observation earlier that sometimes women... There was a great Onion headline a few years ago in The Onion, which is a fine newspaper. And the headline was... Area woman changes boyfriend into someone she's not interested in. And we were noting that sometimes there are people who do, maybe people in this room named Sarah.
Well, you just read the email.
Who occasionally will make over a boyfriend into someone that they perhaps find less compelling. Filing away all those flaws. Just dull. Justin says, Rick, to my credit, I was too stubborn to allow any renovating by your producer, Sarah.
Uh-huh. That all it says?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Whew, I thought it was going to get bad.
No. No, he's just pointing out that he is all man, and in no way was made over or renovated by you. Rick, he says in his next email, douche, I first want to make the point that Zaira's awful elimination show outfitting... It's all kinds of syntax happening here. I first want to make the point that Zaira's awful elimination show outfitting, I think he means outfit, her outfitting, meaning her, the way she was dressed, left her looking like a rejected Ramon. My theory is she is so obviously bad that they'll keep her around until the elimination starts to get difficult, then they will cut her to buy them an extra week to decide who should stay. Also, you geek... Although I hate Jill, she is single-handedly the only performer who killed it in the elimination performance.
What?
Okay. The night before, the panel reamed her for over-singing Don't You Forget About Me. Wednesday, she showed up and, with ease, outperformed Dana and Patrice put together.
Okay, are you
kidding
me?
That's just not...
He's joking.
That's just incorrect.
It ends with I'm joking, right?
Yes. It's the opposite day. Even though I agree that Dana didn't deserve to get voted off, she definitely did not outperform either of the two she was pitted against. Lastly, in your next live Viso reading, please to be sharing with the masses the stores who carry this Viso you so speak of. Thank you, Justin.
See? I'm still working on him.
All right, there you go. Now we're renovating your drinking habits.
Bye, Viso, Justin.
Do it now.
Do it.
All right.
It's getting unpleasant.
It really
Can
is.
We break?
Let's break.
Okay.
It's 503-733-2970. Here's what's coming up. top 10 wedding songs that Scotty hates playing. We've also got Matt Lindland going to be talking about Sport Fight 17 later on. Don't forget, there's now 4.4% more Rick Emerson Show every single day. Who are you texting? Oh, I'm sorry.
Nobody.
Okay. Back after this is a Rick Emerson Show on AM 970 Solid State Radio.
Come on, pretty baby, won't you dance?